This podcast is produced on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello everyone, welcome to Books Without Borders, the podcast where two people in different hemispheres come together to talk about our favourite things, books. I'm Emma.
And I'm Nina.
And today we are here with a very special guest. We have got Laurel Black, author of Lost Kingdom, and oh my goodness, we are so excited. This is our first author talk, and we could not be happier that it's Laurel.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. Thank you so much for coming.
I'd love to also mention that on theme with our podcast, we now have three time zones, three continents represented in the Books Without Borders world here. I'm in Italy at the moment in school. Emma, of course, is in Australia.
As always.
And Laurel, you're in the North American continent.
I am in Nashville, Tennessee. So I feel like we couldn't all be farther apart. So it's great to come together in this way.
Absolutely.
It's amazing we found a time zone that works for all three of us.
Yes.
Barely. We barely found that.
Yes. Thanks again. It's really great to have you here. Nina, did you want to kick us off?
Before we jump into the questions with Laurel, I wanted to give listeners a brief description since this is a new book that might not have reached all of our listeners all over the world quite yet. A description of the story so you know somewhat what we're talking about as we go through these questions. So Lost Kingdom follows a girl named Raven who has lost her memory and finds herself in a work camp underground amongst other fellow prisoners who are enslaved by this group called the Rathalans. And she discovers as she makes friends in this mine that there are many tribal nations of the country of Istralandria that the Rathalans have been trying to take over. And she doesn't remember what her tribe is, what her people are, but she knows that she's lost a brother and she wants to find him. At the same time, we have another character, Jadak, who has a similar goal of finding something that is lost, and he needs Raven's help. So together, they break out of the mine and go on a journey to find the things that they are looking for together and along the way. Hijinks, adventure, romance, and magic all ensue. How'd I do?
Yay! That was great.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll get into the questions. Just to give listeners a little preview into how we're going to do it today, we've got a non-spoilery section and then a spoilery section later, and we'll give a very clear warning between those two sections so you don't have to worry. If you haven't read Laurel's wonderful debut novel, Lost Kingdom, yet, then you can just stick around for the first half and we'll tell you when to depart, unless you have read the whole book and you want to listen and stick around for the spoilers. We have some really exciting questions coming up, such as, will there be a sequel? However, we're going to keep listeners on the edge of their seat and ask that question at the end, because I'm sure that's what everyone wants to know. So to start things off, we just want to get to know you a little bit more and hear about your writing process. So our first question is, how does your life experience and your photography, which we read about in your author bio, how did that lead to you wanting to pursue writing, and how does it affect your writing?
I actually never had the inclination to become a writer. That was not on my radar. Mm. I am a photographer. But I had an idea for a book. It just came to me. It actually wasn't this book. The first book idea I had, and I wrote this book, was a dystopian novel. And I wrote the whole book, and first draft, second draft, and then I had the idea for this book, and I never published that first book. Huh. So it does help me with the photography, because with Lost Kingdom, I wanted it to be like this kind of immersive fantasy experience where you really feel like you're in this world. And as a photographer, a lot of what I do is I have to visualize a photo before I put it together. I do a lot of product photography. I photograph fashion and people. And so I have to visualize the scene and move things around in my head before I set it up, especially with product photography. That's super helpful. So I felt like those skills with photography really helped me bring the world of Lost Kingdom to life because I could see it in my head. I see it playing out like a movie while I'm writing. And I feel like the visuals of photography and just doing that over the years really helped me bring in a lot of the details and the landscapes and the magic and all the different elements of Lost Kingdom. But you also don't want to give your readers too much. You want them to fill in the blanks. You don't want to give them too many details. So it's finding that balance, but also creating this visually striking world that you feel like people want to hang out in. So that's how photography, I feel like, really helped me craft the world of Lost Kingdom.
That totally comes through. I totally felt immersed in this world, and I could visualize the different landscapes and the different cultural settings so vividly, and that was something that like drew me in and kept me tied to the story for sure.
Good. I feel like I've done my job well then.
Absolutely. And then that, what you were just saying about not giving readers too much detail is exactly the reason that for once Nina and I are aligned on our love of a YA fantasy book. It's so rare for Nina and I to align on our taste in a fantasy book. The fact that we have both loved your book means you have hit that balance perfectly. So like, seriously, well done, because it's a rare phenomenon, let me tell you.
Like, yeah, you all have a whole episode on how you have different taste in fantasy. So I'm like, oh my gosh, how are they going to take Lost Kingdom? So that's really good to hear.
Seriously, yes, like I think pretty much in terms of YA fantasy, only The Hunger Games and Harry Potter have like bridged that gap for us.
So yeah, one of you just recently read The Hunger Games.
That's me.
Okay. Yeah. You can't not like Seriously. The Hunger Games, you know? I mean, that one's just classic. So Lost Kingdom and The Hunger Games. I'm just using that in the same sentence just to make me feel
You know, good. It actually gets me excited about other potential recommendations I might have for Emma in the sphere of YA fantasy and fantasy in general. Because if this book worked, there were certain books that felt maybe neighboring in the tone and the themes and the type of world building that was going on that are like, you know, big names in YA that it felt like Lost Kingdom rivaled pretty well. And so maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Like if you like X book that's very popular, you might like Lost Kingdom. So stick around for that, listeners. But I will say that I'm excited that we connected so well on this book because it makes me excited for other recommendations that I have for Emma.
Absolutely. And now knowing that you've also written another book that you haven't published makes me want to read that, especially since it's dystopian. So are you planning on publishing that one?
I might. That one, it was kind of like a practice novel, I think. Like, because I'm not a trained writer, I'm a photographer, I have an engineering degree. I am not a trained writer. So I had the idea for the dystopian novel, and I was like, okay, I've read a lot of books. You know, I've read a lot of dystopian novels. I've read a lot of fantasy novels, but I didn't know how to write one. So I literally Googled how to write a novel. And I just started doing all this research, and it was my engineering brain, which helps me kind of like reverse engineer all these other books that I've read and loved and bring it into a book. So that was the first novel that I wrote. So if I did go back and publish it, I would have to rewrite a lot of it, because it really was a stepping stone to get me to the Lost Kingdom series. But I still love it, you know? I mean, I spent many years with it and I still love it. So it could be something to revisit once I get through this series.
Did you just say series?
Trilogy. Good question. I do plan for Lost Kingdom to be a trilogy. But then that answers your question at the end. So
that's okay. It came up organically. That's fine.
That's so exciting. Like, both of our eyes just bulged out of our heads when you said series. We were like,
well, sorry. So that was a spoiler. So apologies.
No worries.
Spoiled it.
When something comes up that organically, it really doesn't matter anymore. Okay. So you say that you're not kind of naturally a writer, you're kind of more a photographer, but what would you say that you found has been your greatest challenge kind of coming to that writing space?
I think it's been the editing for me. Like, yeah. I wrote the first draft And I thought it was solid until I started to have beta readers read it. And then I'm like, maybe this isn't so solid. You know, you're too close to it when you're writing it. And so going back and doing multiple drafts of it and continuing to edit it and perfect it and make it better, that was a big challenge for me because I didn't expect it to take that much time. And I didn't expect it to be so much of, I thought of it like this really complex puzzle. Like, I think in one instance, I was like, okay, I want to change the weapon that Raven has or something like that. So it's not just like, oh, you go in one scene and change it. You have to change it throughout the book. So you have to find every place that she's holding one weapon and you have to give her another weapon. And then you have to make sure it's on her all the time or who she gives it to or if she throws it or something like that. And then it's like you correct one thing in the edit, you correct one plot hole and you create two more plot holes that you didn't even notice. And then you got to go back and fix those. And then it changes something else. So that process was super complicated. And I don't know if being trained as a writer would help with that or not. But that was something that made it take a lot longer for me to work through the whole process. And again, I don't know if that could have been shortcutted if I had more training. I felt like it was pretty organic process to do, but it did catch me a little bit by surprise, especially because when you get, you know, you have this idea and you map it all out and you write it all down and you feel like, oh, I'm done. I got my world and characters and idea out. And then, you know, you edit it for 3 years. So that was definitely the most challenging part for me.
Oh, wow. 3 years.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. This was probably like a 4-year process altogether between writing the first draft. Writing the first draft probably took me about 5 months. And then the editing took a while. And again, this is not my full-time thing. And so I had to, you know, I have a full-time photography business and then I was doing this on the side. So that's another reason it took a little bit longer as well.
Well, that actually sort of leads me into our next question, which is about your publishing process. So I don't know if you've noticed on the pod before, I've mentioned a couple times that I have interest in the publishing sector and I've been keeping track more of the publishers behind the books that I've been reading. And so we did a little digging into your publisher and it appears that you are the only author published by this publisher. It's a small company. It's not like under a big name. And so we were curious about like what that publishing process was like. You said you had editors. So some self-published authors don't use editors. Some do. We're just wondering what your publishing journey looked like.
Yeah, that's a great question. Because when I had the idea for Lost Kingdom, and I think after I wrote the first draft, I decided I was to go with traditional publishing. That's how I wanted to do. So I started the process of querying agents. And then I had a conversation with somebody, with a published author who had gone the traditional route and now was going the self-publishing route. And this was somebody I trusted. And she didn't talk me into anything. But after that conversation, I was like, no, I really want to self-publish this. Because one, I don't work for anybody. I quit my corporate job 15 years ago. I don't like having a boss. I love working with a team, but I'm more of a self-starter. I like the whole process of marketing and sales, and I love those things. I love doing the artwork and all of that. So I decided to create my own micropress, which is the publisher that you're talking about. So that's mine. My and my husband's little micropress, because he's an author as well, but not for novels. He doesn't write novels. He writes nonfiction. So I decided to self-publish. And again, that was because I liked all areas of the process of writing, marketing, sales. And not all authors like that. A lot of authors are like, just let me write and I don't want to do anything else. And I think for them, they need more of a team. Like self-publishing might not be the best way to go. So as a self-publisher, I had to hire my own editor. Some authors decide not to do that. I would highly recommend if you are an indie author that you get a really good editor. It is worth every penny. And that process was really what turned the novel into what it is today. So that was kind of the process of, I mean, you got to do everything yourself, but writing, I had beta readers at the beginning, like after the first draft, I revised it. I had my editor go through it. I revised it. I had my editor go through it again. I had some readers on the end. And then I went through the publishing process, which is hiring your cover artist, getting that going, setting it up on Amazon, which I did myself. If you guys have seen my little promo video, my book trailer, I did that. So I know how to do video stuff. So I did that. And so that was kind of the process in a nutshell.
Amazing.
That's a great trailer video.
Thank you. I worked really hard on that video. I got that video done maybe a year before I was done with the book because I thought I was close to being done with the book. And it was fun to do. And one of my talents is I can tell short stories like that. I mean, that video is a minute long. And to tell the whole book story in a minute and tease it and then get the stock images to go in it, it was a fun process.
You really killed the marketing because, like, we were so excited to jump on to this. Like, our late jumping onto it may have indicated otherwise, but I promise we're both just, you know, I'm chronically ill and Nina was in, like, finals season. It was just bad timing. But, like, we were actually so keen to jump onto this project when we saw all the marketing that you did. So, like, bang on with the marketing. You're very good at it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I like that part of it because I like connecting with people like you all who are, like, really excited about books. Like, that thrills me. And I think a lot of authors, other indie authors that I've seen, they just kind of like hit publish to their book on Amazon or wherever they're publishing it and just kind of be like, oh, why does nobody care about what I'm doing? And for me, I'm like, I want people to read it. I want to put it in the hands of people. I want to get it out there. I want to connect with people like you guys. And so I made it a fun process as opposed to, you know, some kind of tedious, you know, mass emailing and all that kind of stuff. I wanted people to really see this and enjoy it as much as I have. So I appreciate you saying that because that does mean a lot to me.
It shows.
You know, that's actually a very similar reason why I am interested in going into publishing. Like, one of my primary sort of motivations with that potential future. I mean, I'm just graduating college this semester, so of course everything's sort of open, open possibility at the moment, but I always really wanted to have a role to play in connecting readers and authors and facilitating those kinds of experiences that were really important to me as a young reader growing up. So I really appreciate, you know, your dedication to, like, getting in touch with the readers and making sure that, like, you put this book out there and you make yourself sort of available in this way and, you know, have these conversations. So that's super cool. I love that we're both sort of from different angles interested in the same thing.
Yeah, the publishing world is such a fun, I mean, there's so many different aspects of it. Like, you do have a lot to choose from if you want to go into publishing, because there are just so many different ways you can do it and ways you can support readers and authors and all of that. So it's very exciting.
Absolutely.
So how did the idea for Lost Kingdom come about?
So I was writing this dystopian novel. And I'd written it, I'd done about the second draft, and then I remember I woke up one morning and I put my feet on the floor and the idea came to me for Lost Kingdom and it just came like this. It said, there's a girl, her name is Raven, and she can turn into a bird. And that was it. There's nothing more, nothing less than that. And I was like, okay, that's a cool idea, but I'm writing this other book, so I can't really do anything with that idea. But the idea stuck with me and it kept building on. And I was like, oh, well, there's this other guy and he's connected to a bear. And then there's this other thing. And it kept, the world started building in my head. So I just got out another notebook and I started a different series of brainstorming for this other idea. And then I got to the point where I was like, I think I need to stop writing this first book or revising it and go to this next book. And that's how it came around. And from there, it's just one idea came to me after the next idea. And I think I have, like, notebooks and notebooks full of ideas of brainstorming and world building and character development and all of those things. But it all started with that one idea of there's a girl named Raven. So kind of funny how those things work out.
Yeah. I mean, follow the creativity. It's
yes,
quite often the best thing to do. I've been learning that more and more as I spend more time as a chronically ill and disabled person, and honestly, there's very few things in life that are worth living for more than following your own creativity and that feeling you get when you're really engrossed in something that your brain decides to do almost of its own accord.
Yeah, I love that. And giving yourself permission to do
yes.
it. I find that I struggle with giving myself permission. Like, oh, I should be working on this other thing or I should be doing this. And then I'm like, no, I really want to do this. It brings me joy to do this. Well, do you deserve joy? You know, it just goes on and on, you know? And so it's good. It's like following the creativity. I love that you said it that way, and giving yourself permission to do it.
Totally.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. So you mentioned that this idea came to you and your first thought was, like, there's a girl named Raven. And I was wondering, now that you mentioned not only that idea being so natural to you and your previous idea being a YA dystopian, I was wondering, like, why you were interested in exploring a YA world and YA characters, and, like, what drew you to that kind of a project? Because, of course, it's so different and it's so much something that we have to, like, treat with so much more care, I think, when we're using a YA voice, because it can so easily go sour, or it can so easily be falling into certain tropes. And I think you accomplished, like, finding this very authentic young person perspective very well. So I was curious, like, what motivated you to choose YA?
Well, first, I really love reading YA. And I think I love reading it and also writing it because I love about younger people, like, the first time they do things, like the first time they fall in love and the first adventure that they go on. And they're really discovering who they are. And that's a process that I've done up until the age I am now. So it's not just for young people, but it's like, who am I and what do I want? And how do I show up in this world as myself? Not as my parents, not as my teachers, not as anybody else, like me. And that's a theme that I really like to explore. And I feel like that's, you can explore that at any age, but I feel like with young adults, that's definitely a good time that people are trying to set out on their own and have their own independence and find their own sense of bravery in this world. And that's really what drew me to that. And I just love YA romances. Mine is a very slow burn romance, but I love the tension of it. I love the sweetness of it. Those kind of elements that I feel like you don't necessarily find with just regular fantasy. So those are some of the reasons that I decided to stick with the young adult side of it.
Oh, yes. I totally know what you mean. And that's something that I really love about reading YA. I mean, of course, I'm still quite young myself. I'm the youngest of the three of us here. But just reflecting back on especially, like, those firsts of, like, being a teenager and the sort of excitement and passion and, like, newness of it all, and how it's so connected to the way that we, like, create ourselves slowly over time. I find that YA is a really great way to explore a more, like, exciting, passionate, melodramatic story that sometimes adult fiction can't necessarily have, because there's an inauthenticity to the way that, you know, adults don't speak with the level of, like you said, tender and sort of fragile, vulnerable language and experience. I also appreciate that, especially when it comes to romance, because a lot of the time in more adult literature, there isn't as much of a slow burn because, you know, it's not the first time that you're experiencing this kind of romance. And so you don't always have the opportunity to build up this tension and this reveal, because things are revealed much quicker when you get older, and my experience, you know? So I really liked that element of this book, and I totally see what you're trying to do, and it came through very well.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I do. I was thinking adults are so jaded, so maybe that's why I didn't want to write adult stuff.
Yes.
But younger people, again, it's that first time that they're exploring stuff. So I think that's a really fun side of it.
Absolutely.
So keeping it spoiler-free for now, which of the characters in your book do you relate to the most and why?
I feel like I relate to the bear Ka. I feel like he's the most like me. Like, I love all the characters.
It's funny you say that. I fully predicted you were going to say that. Like, there was something about the voice of that bear that I was like, this seems like such an authentic, like, straight from the brain kind of voice. Like, there is very little filter going on here, and I appreciated that character's voice so much. Like, that I loved that character so much. He's easily my favorite.
Oh, good. Yeah, I feel like Ka is like my 15-year-old self. Like, I was sarcastic and edgy. I'm hopefully not like that as an adult, but it was just like, oh, that's me. That was me in high school, you know, just like calling it as it is, being sarcastic, being funny. So I love him in that way. And I kind of wrote him as like, I was inspired by, if you ever watch Star Trek, it's like Mr. Spock compared to Captain Kirk. So it's like Jadak is the Captain Kirk and he's rash and he's reckless. And then like the Mr. Spock is the logical, you know, let's bring it back and calculate the odds kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also like Iron Man to Jarvis, like Jarvis is the very logical computer voice trying to keep Iron Man in control. So I felt like Ka kind of played that role of the more wise, logical, and sarcastic characters. I feel like I relate to him in that way because, yeah, he just seemed like my 15-year-old self. So he was a blast to write.
Love that. Yeah, honestly, I feel like I am of of this podcast. I am that.
I am that character. Yes, I'm the Jadak. Okay. Yeah.
I am that. Yeah. So you and I are relating on that for sure.
Yeah.
For listeners, maybe we could give a brief profile. So in the story, we have Jadak as one of the main protagonists, and he is this sort of headstrong, really willful young guy who's on a mission, and he has this bear companion, sort of, what do you call it? I want to say a familiar.
That would be a good word for it.
That he has this magical connection to, who primarily only speaks to him. So they have this very unique connection where Cobb will sort of be in his ear, in his mind, giving advice or commenting on Jeddak's silly, at times, choices.
Yeah, he's a fun sidekick. And so he's good to have in there. I don't think the story would be as fun if he weren't in there giving his opinion on everything, which I love.
I love that he third wheels the whole time. Like, he does. He's just like keeping the tension alive because, you know, almost in every fantasy, whether it's YA or adult, whatever age category, there's almost always this trope of like two rivals or two strangers on a mission together, and they're destined to sleep in the same bed at some point and have this tension build up. But of course, that can't necessarily build in the same way because Ka's in the corner, you know, and he's not like a person, you know, creating his own sort of romantic angle that might complicate it into a love triangle because he's a bear. But at the same time, he's adding this like commentary and sort of keeping them in check. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and another reason I included him in it was that I love reading. When I read books, I like dialogue. I feel like dialogue just moves the story by a lot faster. And I read some novels where it's just like a lot of interiority from the character and you're not getting to the dialogue. And I feel like that moves a little slow for me. So I wanted a character in there with Jadak so that I could have more dialogue as he goes on his adventure. Because half the book, you know, Raven and Jadak aren't together. I mean, they interact, but they're not in a place where they can have dialogue, and they're not the only two characters in the novel. But that was another reason that I added in an animal familiar with him, because I thought it gave more dimension and depth and move the story on faster to have more dialogue in his point of view.
Definitely. It kind of gave Golden Compass energy, you know?
Yes. Okay. I was just thinking that as I was talking to you about that. I love the Golden Compass and how they all had their, I don't know if they called them animal familiars. I know it was their soul.
Demons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that. Okay. And so for our last question of the non-spoilery section, before the listeners depart, who haven't read the full book yet, why don't you leave them with a recommendation of a book you've been enjoying recently, or maybe your favorite book, whatever you want to share with listeners. What's a book you recommend?
Oh my gosh, I'll tell you what I'm reading now, and then I might tell you what I recommend. I am just finishing The Remnant Chronicles by Mary E. Pearson, I think is her name. So that's The Kiss of Deception is the first book in that trilogy. So I'm just wrapping up the third book, and so that's really good. That has a fun fantasy world, young adult, all the stuff. So that's been exciting. So I'm at the very end. I just fell asleep last night, so I couldn't get to the end of it, but that was good. One book that I love, and let me think, I might not get the name of the author, but is The Shadow Between Us. Have you all read that one?
I haven't.
And I can't think of the author right now, but that is one of my favorite books. It is also, I think it's young adult fantasy, but it's definitely worth checking out. It has a red cover with a sword on it. You'll know it when you see it.
Okay, awesome. Good to know. I'll have to check it out. So that's the end of the non-spoilery section. For listeners who haven't read the book yet, please go out and do that. Go get Laurel's book. It's super good. We really endorse it, and we would love for you to read it and come back and listen to the rest of this episode and our other questions that have a little more spice to them. So once you've done that, we'll be happy to have you back. Before you head off, though, if you need any other enticement to read this book, I highly recommend this book for readers of all fantasy types. As you can tell, both Emma and I, with different fantasy reading tastes, love this book. But I found this book to rival some of the strongest and most popular YA fantasy on the market today. A lot of the work of Sarah J. Maas has felt very like in the realm of those kinds of stories with these complex character dynamics and vast world building, and also stories like The Winter's Curse by Marie Rutkowski, which is one of my favorite YA fantasy stories. So yeah, if those are books that ring a bell to you, if you're looking for this kind of adventure story in a new setting with new magic and new stakes at hand, definitely check out Laurel's book. Now, let's get into the spoilery discussion.
This is a book talk. There's spoilers ahead. There's spoilers ahead, so make sure you're well read.
Do you want to start us off, Emma, with your first question?
Absolutely. So you've mentioned before that you had editors involved, beta readers, all this other stuff. Are there any particularly significant changes that were made to your book since the first draft?
Yes, there was a very significant change. In the first draft, Raven had no map. So she didn't get a map in the mine, which you all remember, she got that map, which led her on this whole quest, or part of it. It was a significant part of it. But in the first draft, she didn't have that. And what I found was, because I was going the traditional publisher route in the very beginning, I wrote a synopsis of the book when I was done with the first, second draft of it. And I realized that she just didn't have a lot that was pulling her forward. She didn't have a lot that she was going after. She was just kind of following Jeddak along. And I was like, I can't write this weak woman. I only know, you know, I want to write this strong woman who's going after what she wants. So I had to think of a way to find, or a way to give her real motivation to move forward when she had lost her memories. Like, of course she wants to get out of the situation she's in, which is a painful situation, being enslaved in a mine. But once she did that, it had to pull her forward. So I came up with the map that she got, the magical map, as a way to, one, give a little bit more mystery to where we're going, two, to bring her and Jeddak together in a more cohesive way while they're going on their journey, and three, just to make her character just go after something a little bit more. So that was a really big way that the book changed.
You know, I'm actually very curious, because we have a map in the physical book of Eastlandria, but we don't have a picture of Raven's difficult to decipher magical hand map. And I'm so curious how you picture that in your brain.
That's a good question. I kind of see it as like a labyrinth. Almost. Mm. You know, those circular labyrinths. So something that's like that. And I thought about perhaps putting that on the cover of the first book, like bringing that design in there somehow. But honestly, I don't think I have a strong picture of it in my head besides just something like a labyrinth. So I would need a designer to bring it to life. But I think the closest thing would be some sort of maze labyrinth. But not quite. I'm not being very descriptive here because I don't think I really saw it in my head. But I think a cool designer could bring it to life if I described a little bit about it.
You know, that's actually kind of similar to what I was...
Yeah. I was about to say that you clearly described it well enough, because Nina and I have both pictured it, you know, similarly, like a kind of maze, like a circular maze.
Well, actually, my maze was square, but it was it was very linear in that way, you know? It wasn't like a map of a terrain or anything. So that's
so it kind of goes back to like giving the reader like just enough detail, and then they can fill in the gaps. So I don't always worry about like giving every single little detail about something, because I know, just hearing both of you talk, that like you filled in the gaps for yourself.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of aspect as well. So there were some things in the book like that that I wasn't too worried about. I was just like, I'll give them just enough and then they can kind of make it cool for themselves. But if it does get turned into a movie one day, you know, someone will have to decide what it looks like.
Right.
I almost pictured one of those, like, you know, those old-fashioned, those little plastic games with the ball bearings?
Yes.
Oh, you, that like, you had to get into a hole in the middle
and
through a maze. And like, it was like that, except the ball bearing was like a little ball of light. I don't know. That's just what I had in my head.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. And it has, of course, it has like a depiction of a bird in the middle of it. So maybe you try to get the ball to the middle. I love that. Okay.
Yeah. Get the ball to the bird.
Yeah, get the ball to the bird.
Feed the bird with the little seed of light.
I love that. Yes. Okay. It's decided now. That's how it is.
Interesting. Interesting. I love these ideas. I'm excited to see if they make their way into later editions of the book.
Yeah. I'll put you in the acknowledgments, like map description. Nice. Thank you so much, Nina and Emma. So.
Well, okay. Oh, I have also a second question sort of about the earlier stages of the book. I was wondering if, so in the story, there are so many different romantic dynamics going on, some that are brief and come and go, and others that are more slow burns that come along in time. And I was wondering if Avery was ever a love interest or if there was a love sort of conflict between her and Jadak that might have made her so adverse to him marrying Lila, because that was something I kind of felt like was maybe in the background and maybe was in a previous draft, but I wasn't sure, so I was curious to ask you.
I kind of implied it. I did not spell it out because I kind of wanted you to have that question. I wanted that tension to be there, but not make it very clear that they had any sort of like romantic connection. Honestly, so I could kind of leave it open for where I want to go with her story, because she's not really, like, she doesn't appear a lot in this book, but I want her to appear in the second book more.
Oh, good. So I liked her.
Yeah, I liked her too. But there wasn't really an opportunity for her to show up very much in this book because of how it was done. But I liked her and I was like, I want to bring her back and I kind of want to leave her story open. So I did drop in that tension between them. Like, there could have been something romantic. She could have had a crush on him, but does she? Is that why she's mad? So yeah, you were supposed to have that feeling of like, what is going on there? Why is she so irritated with him? And I'm going to kind of see where I go with that one. So
interesting. Okay, yeah. I'm glad I picked up on it then.
Yeah, you did.
I do love the strong women representation that you've got in this book between Avery and, oh my God, I've forgotten her name.
Raven?
Raven too, obviously, but the Magi
Lila.
Girl
Lila.
Who's in, no, I mean, sure, in a way, but no, I meant the one who's enslaved and helps.
Oh, Hen.
Helps Raven, Hen, but no, the one who's enslaved but and
Sora.
Is forced and who's forced to give her the potion.
Oh,
but who does
Sable.
Try to help her.
Sable.
That's it. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Thank
that
you.
That just shows how many great strong women there are that we can list
exactly.
off.
Exactly.
So
like you're
many.
Just listing off all these great strong women characters.
Yes. Like, Sora, Lila, Sable, the other girl.
Hen.
Sable's friend.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned Sable because one, I have a dog that I just got a couple months ago who I named Sable.
Oh, nice.
So I named her after the character in the book because I love that character. Even though she's such a minor character, I was like, I feel like there's a whole storyline with her. So there might be like a spinoff with her. So I'm glad you picked up on her because I have many outlines on my computer and she is the main character in one of those outlines. But I'm only one person, so I can't write everything. But I love her, and I'm glad that you picked up on her being this strong character, because I definitely feel like she's got stuff going on that could turn into a full story.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I loved her, yeah. But yeah, I also really loved there's a sequence of chapters in like the early middle when Raven and Jadak are escaping initially, when he's kind of hoping that she'll just go along and follow him, and she's like really headstrong and of course scared, because of course, and he's like, why isn't she just following me, it's so well done and so comedically well done, but also like so realistic that of course a strong woman who's scared isn't just gonna like follow your orders, dude. Like, and I just absolutely loved that.
Oh, good, because I think in the first draft she did. She was just like, oh, I'm a puppet. Okay. I'll go along. And I was like, no, that's not going to work. I think I have trouble, right? Well, I wrote her that way in the beginning, and then I was like, I need strong women here. Like, we need these strong women represented. And so I'm glad that you picked up on that, because it is something that I was like, I need this in here. And it wasn't in the first draft, which was weird. And I think there's a part of me that's like, I like the romance side of like the girl being rescued, but I also don't want her to be a damsel in distress.
Totally. And finding that balance, especially with someone who's got memory loss.
Yeah. So it's finding that balance of like, I wanted him to be this strong guy and be protective and all this stuff, but I didn't want her to be weak. I wanted her to also be strong. And finding that balance, I did find to be a little bit challenging, and it took a bunch of rewrites to get it just right.
Yeah, you nailed it. I was really impressed.
Thank you.
Finding the balance and like going sort of like against the typical story, I mean, seeing that you did that so well, it feels like something you could do also a lot with Avery's story. I'm just thinking about like, you know, I read a lot of YA fantasy, and so I have a lot of like tropes in my brain that immediately populate when, you know, a certain setup comes up. And to me, that setup seemed like maybe it was a previous romance that she never told him that she liked him, or maybe that she's queer and just wasn't interested. But you know what is not done enough, in my opinion? Not to say that I'm writing this for you. Don't take my advice if this isn't where you're going. But what's never explored is like the complexity of like heterosexual friendships, or I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like
friendships between men and women.
I don't know why I straightly
who are both straight. Yes,
right.
It's all good.
But like, you know what I mean? Like friendships between, I'm going to say not even just men and women, but boys and girls in this stage of life where you're exploring, like, what is sexuality and what is attraction and what is romance? Like, finding the lines to draw between friends and romantic partners when we have so many sort of stereotypes written out for us that we're almost expected to go down, you know, that road. Like, oh, your best friend is a guy, maybe that means that you, you know, have a romantic attraction to him. But it's not explored enough, the complexity of finding the balance of, like, those kinds of relationships and like a sort of fulfillment in the friendship of a boy and a girl, you know?
And I feel like that's something like definitely teenagers explore, you know, and that was something in my life. Like, I had friends that were guys, and then I had friends that were guys, and there was tension there, and then you have your romantic interests. So yeah, I agree with you. But I feel like there's a balance, and every relationship doesn't have to be a sexual one between two characters. You know, there's a lot of room to explore other things. So maybe I'll help you. You can help me co-write the second book and we'll explore it together.
Well, you know, I think that would be really relatable for a lot of young people, seeing a situation where maybe someone's questioning, like, I have a strong connection with this guy and I'm a girl. Does that mean I like them? Or does that just mean that we're compatible friends, you know? And like, I'm bothered that he likes this girl. Maybe that's because I'm bothered that he's giving some of the attention that he gave to me to her, not because I'm attracted to him, but because we're besties, you know? Like, so I think there's a lot to explore there, and I like that you left that open for Avery's character to like build on in future books.
Yeah, because it goes back to that newness that all these characters are experiencing. It's like, what is this? And what do I want? And am I attracted to him? And all those things, because they don't know, because they've never experienced it before. And I think that's the fun of it, is doing these things for the first time and reading about characters doing it for the first time. So I feel like that's kind of what you're talking about there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So why don't we get into the next question, which for me was, how did you sort of go about developing these language and cultural systems. You know, there's all these different tribes with different powers and societal norms and stuff. But then there's also like elements of a sort of foreign language present in the like names and terms for certain things. I was just curious about your writing process with that and like, but what maybe influenced the ways you develop the culture and language in the story?
As I said before, I have a lot of notebooks that I fill up with different ideas, brainstorming. Like sometimes I'll have ideas about the climax and then the next idea will be about the beginning, and I'll just write all these things down as they come. And I think those cultural elements and tribes and everything were just developed through those brainstorming processes. So I write things down. And again, I can visualize them in my mind and things like that, like if it's a setting or if it's a city or a character or something like that. And I change things around in my mind until it clicks. Like I can feel like a click on the inside. It's like intuition or something like that. And so when I was exploring the different tribes, I was thinking, you know, I love the idea of like elementals. You know, I've read a lot of books with elementals where characters are connected to the elements. So I like that. I love, I mean, in my life, I've grown up, you know, loving nature, loving hiking and things like that. So I wanted it to be like really earthy, everything like connected to some sort of natural thing or animal or earth or plant or something like that. So that was a big theme that I wanted to have in there. And that kind of helped me narrow down, you know, what are these different tribes? What's their magic? What are they connected to? And I loved Lord of the Rings growing up. So it kind of has that similar world to it, like a kind of a Middle Earth type feel. So those were kind of things that guided me along. The language, honestly, I just kind of made stuff up based on like what I thought looked good on the page. Like if you read it out loud to me, I wouldn't know what it said. Like I would be like, what? I wrote that. I just kind of picked words and letters that looked good together. Same when I picked the names. Like Raven obviously came to me early on when I had the idea for the book in the beginning. But when I was exploring other names, it was really important to me to get the right vowels in the names. Like I wanted them to look good on the page. And like bad guys had just different, like it started with an M or a TH or something like that that seemed more like evil to me. I don't know. And then good guys seemed different. It was all more about how it looked on the page. And even when you guys are saying names out loud to me on this episode, I'm thinking, wait, who is that character? Because I've only really seen it on the page. So something about the way the word looks on the page affected the names that I chose and the language that I put in there, if that makes any sense.
That totally makes sense. That's really interesting. I like following your sort of, what is it? It's not synesthesia, but it's like the vibe of a word or a letter feels associated with a type of character. I know what you mean, and I really like that.
Yeah, like I had to think of names like Malengard. You know, which
right
for some reason that sounds like darker to me than Ascaland. Like,
yeah,
and I don't know if it does to readers, but it did to me, and just how it looked on the page made a difference to me.
Totally.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like there's those associations with like the word malevolent,
yes,
and stuff like that that you've got, whereas anything with land at the end of it sounds more familiar, sounds more friendly, sounds more open. So, you know, there's all those.
I also, well, this made me think of what sometimes when I read fantasy books and I can't pronounce any of the names of cities or the names of characters or anything, that annoys me. Because then I go through it, I'm like, okay, that's the character with the J name, that's the character with the M name. And
your brain just goes, phew.
Yeah, the brain just skips over it. So I was like, okay, I want different names, like fantasy names, and I mean names of city, names of the characters, but also names that are kind of rooted in something, like East Landria. Yes. Like East Land, like you can put it together in your head. You don't need to like learn an old Celtic dialect to figure this out.
Yeah.
So that was something important to me.
I appreciated that a lot.
Oh, good. Okay. To make like different words that sounded fantasy, but they were also rooted in the English language that people could pronounce if they wanted to. So that was something important.
I also really liked the way that your names strongly tied to the different tribes that they were associated with and how that kind of like played into the foreshadowing, specifically with like Skylar's character, because he said his name was Skylar before he said he was a Xavian, but I sort of already guessed that just based on the name, you know? And then there was that interesting part that I'm just now remembering about how Raven has that interaction in the forest of the Magi and how she like falsely sees her brother and she has this false association with his name, that his name was something totally different. I can't remember at the moment, but she thought his name was Riven, I think. And it made sense to me that that wasn't actually his name because that isn't like a sort of sky or bird associated name the way Sora or Raven or Skylar is. So it really like built up the story.
Yeah, well, I'm actually a birder. So I go out on trails with my binoculars and I find all the birds. And so I had to pick fun bird names for these characters. So Skylar obviously is not a bird, but Sora is a bird and Raven is a bird and their friend who you see very briefly, Bard, they're Bard owls. I think they're Bard hawks too. So I had to get clever with the bird names because you don't, well, I could name them like Wren or something like that, but I was like, I need some fun, strong bird names. And that was a fun element as well. And yes, it does tie in when the reader's reading it to be like, okay, that's part of the bird tribe. So it makes it fun.
Right. I also liked, like, especially now that you're saying that you specifically chose sort of more malicious names to tie to the evil characters, you gave Lila, who's the main villain of the story, the most, like, innocuous, you know, sweet-sounding, vulnerable sort of character name. So it really was a strong deception.
The most human name. The most, like, English, the plain English name.
Yeah. And because it was the most plain English name, it was the one I liked the least. So, because I love different types of names. Names are really interesting to me. And hers, I had to pick a name that I didn't. There's nothing wrong with the name Lila. If you're listening and your name is Lila, that is a really great name. So, that's great. But it wasn't a fun fantasy name. And that's why I picked it. Because she didn't turn out to be a good character.
That's interesting.
Speaking of which, that leads perfectly into my next question, which is, so, like, I'm rarely actually fully surprised by a plot twist these days, especially in a YA novel, but wow, you got me. You got me with that one. You got me with the Lila thing. I really did not see that coming. Had you always planned for her to, like, be a full-blown villain like that? Like, was that always the plan?
I think that was in the first draft because I had to figure out how to get Jeddak out of his engagement to her.
That's exactly what Nina said when I said I was surprised by the plot twist. Nina was like, I expected something to happen to Lila.
Yeah. I've read too many YA fictions to not know that you got to get rid of her somehow,
right? You
got to
get rid of her.
She was either going to die or and something was going to happen.
And she seemed so sweet throughout the whole thing. Like, he didn't have a problem with her. There was nothing wrong with her. So I had to, you know, wipe her off the map. And so I think that was in the first draft of how I was going to bring in the White Widow, who turns out to be the main evil, quote-unquote evil character, and kind of wrap the whole thing up. So that is a fun plot twist, though, because I'm hoping readers are going along like, well, how is he going to make this decision? And how is this going to wrap up? And then she turns out to be this, like, awesome evil character. So I love that part.
Oh, totally. And I mean, I don't want to say I completely saw it coming because it did, like, I knew something was going to happen, but I didn't know exactly where it was going to go. But it made perfect sense to me when she ended up being the evil character because I just felt like we didn't get enough of her and Jeddak's relationship or, like, really intimate, like, firsthand moments between them to, like, actually develop a care about, like, their dynamic or, like, really strongly desire them to be together. So, like, I was like, you know, I could take or leave this relationship. It almost, like, is something that I'm like, why is he so attached to it when I don't feel that sort of attachment? And then when she has this reveal, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad she was there.
I mean, I just assumed it was strong cognitive dissonance, but...
First loves, first engagement at, what are they, like, 17, 16?
Yeah, they're 17. So yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes to write, was when he's getting married to her at the end and Raven's like standing off to the side. I was like, this is so much fun. Because I love something that, you know, I really focused on in the novel was tension. So when I wrote the outline, every scene in the outline, I put, what is the tension in this scene? And it doesn't have to be like someone's trying to kill somebody else. It could be someone's withholding a secret or something simple like that. But there had to be, for me, some sort of tension in that scene to carry the reader forward. And so scenes with high tension, like the climax, obviously, in a book, those are really fun scenes to write.
Absolutely. I felt that for sure. That kind of leads into my next question. We're really smoothly transitioning into all these questions. Because there were so many romantic sort of characters or romantic interests going on in this story, I was curious, if you were a character in the story, who would be your choice? Like, if no one's taken, you know, and villains are available. I do like a villain redemption a little bit sometimes. So I'm just curious, who's your favorite romantic interest of this story?
I definitely love Jeddak. I mean, I wrote him as a character. Like, I've never dated anybody reckless or rash or anything like that. So I was like, it would be really fun to write a character like that, because I do like watching movies with characters like that, for sure. Like, for instance, Lord of the Rings, I am definitely a fan of Aragorn. So he's my guy in that. So definitely Jeddak. He has a lot of things going on that I love. From, again, a fictional man point of view. So can't say I'd marry
different
him.
Standards.
Different totally. Standards. Yeah. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but he's definitely an important player in there for me.
I was very drawn to Skylar. I was like,
me too.
What is going on with him? I want to know more. I almost was like, I didn't even need that much of his interaction with Raven to feel like almost rooting for them in a way. So I'm curious to see where he goes in the following books.
Skylar is, I love Skylar too, but he's going to play a bigger role in the next book. Ooh. So it's going to be more love triangle-y. Not everyone loves a love triangle. I like a love triangle. Not everyone likes that. So some people might be put off by that, but I write these books
for me.
So, okay. I'm like, I write them because I love them and the people that love them get on board. But yeah, I like a good love triangle. So I'm kind of setting it up in book one, and book two, we'll go into it a little bit more.
Oh, yes. I'm here for it.
All right. We are about to run out of time, but we're also just finished our questions. So thank you so much for coming. This has been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed I'm sure it can speak for both of us. We have really enjoyed having this chat with you today, Laurel. And once again, we highly, highly recommend to everyone. I'm sure people who are listening should be only the people who've read Laurel's book already. But just in case, please read Laurel's book. It's so good. Lost Kingdom. Check it out. Cannot wait for those sequels. Really looking forward to it.
Thank you all so much for having me. I had a blast chatting with you all. I love your show and I'm just thrilled to be here. So thank you again.
That's so nice to hear.
Thanks everyone for listening. We've been Books Without Borders. As always, you can contact us at bookswithoutborderspod@gmail.com. That's bookswithoutborderspod@gmail.com. Laurel, did you have any socials that you wanted to promote?
Yes, you can find me online at laurelblackbooks.com. And I'm also on Instagram at laurelblackbooks.
Great. And I'll make sure those are in our show notes as well. I'll also have a list of all the books that we mentioned in this episode in our show notes, because there were a few that Nina mentioned for recommendations, and a list of any other resources as well. And we will catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.